Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
When we last visited this series on early football, a new game called rugby was shipped across the sea to America from England, but also association football or soccer was shipped over there too. Well, how did Americans treat this game and how did they modify it? Well, that's coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and welcome to another edition of the History Rewind, where we go from the early roots of football, back in ancient Greece and Rome is where we started, and now we're just coming over across the pond, across the Atlantic, to the United States. And the history of football timeline continues in a new world. And this is part four in our series, where America transforms the game. Now, rugby seems to be the sport that became popular in early America. By 1860, the game was well abolished in many American schools due to its rough nature. It was revived in 1862 by Garrett Smith Hiller when he organized a group of Yale students to play it again, using the rules that were a reasonably close imitation of soccer. Still, the game was often more of an excuse to beat up freshmen in a hazing activity than anything else. The game stuck around and became popular in the Eastern colleges, though, and on November 6, 1869, an intercollegiate game was played between Princeton and Rutgers. The game played this day was very similar to rugby and had 20 players on the field for each team during the action. In 1871, Harvard University started playing a variation to the game called the Boston game, which differed from the others by allowing a player to pick up the ball and run as if he was chased. In fall of 1873, Yale decided to invite representatives from Harvard, Rutgers, Columbia, and Princeton to a convention of sorts in New York City to draw up a set of rules for an intercollegiate football association, a precursor to the NCAA. Harvard declined to attend it due to the fact that the other schools had no intentions of honoring any of the rules of the Boston game. The four remaining schools established the Intercollegiate Football Association, or IFA, and set 15 as a number of players allowed on each team. The Harvard players, well, they still had a very real desire to play the other schools. So in 1874, Harvard challenged Yale to a game using the Boston rules. Yale declined the challenge due to the rule differences, but because the game under IFA rules that Yale was more similar to soccer, so Harvard's team captain, Harry Grant, still was not discouraged. He was anxious for his football team to engage in competition, and he had heard a very similar game was played just over the Canadian border at McGill University. Consequently, Grant got in touch with the captain of the McGill team, David Roger, and invited the team to play two games in Cambridge, Massachusetts on May 13th and 14th of 1874. Harvard, until this time, was still playing the Boston game, so the rules also resembled soccer more than it does today's game of American football. The Boston rules differed from the IFA version of the rules, though, because in the IFA, a player could never pick up the ball and run. Boston rules allowed him to pick up the ball and tuck it only when he was being chased by an opponent. Harvard players were in for a surprise, though, when McGill's squad came to Cambridge a few days early and practiced in front of them. The McGill players kicked the ball and subsequently ran with it under their arms. Harvard's Grant pointed out politely that it was violated a basic rule of American football. The McGill captain replied it didn't violate any of the rules of the Canadian game. And when Harvard captain asked McGill leaders, "What game do you play?" David Roger replied, "Rugby." Then they managed to agree to play the forthcoming games with a half Canadian, half American rules. Harvard normally played their game with 15 players to a side, but McGill could only manage to bring 11 with them for the contest, so the sides used an 11-on-11 format. The Harvard University newspaper printed the following excerpt the next day. The McGill University Football Club will meet the Harvard Football Club on Wednesday and Thursday, May 13th and 14th. The game will probably be called at 3 o'clock. Admittance, 50 cents. The proceeds will be donated to the entertainment of our visitors from Montreal. The May 13th contest started with the Canadian College's rules and was to have second half be the Boston rules. Harvard players enjoyed the Montreal version so much that they requested their opponents to play the remainder of the game with the rules McGill brought. Harvard won that first game 3-0. And the next day's game ended in a scoreless tie between the two schools, and Harvard adopted a lot of the elements of the game of their Canadian friends had shown them, including tackling, use of downs, and the kicked field goals. And by the way, that second day it was played under Harvard's Boston rules. These changes to Harvard's football rules were setting the table for something much bigger and better, though. When we resume our part 5 of this series, we will introduce a true mastermind and founder of American football, Walter Camp, and his gang over at Yale's campus, the new authoritative organizational body and leader for football, right here on the pigskindispatch.com, your place for good news about football and its great history and heritage. So we hope you'll join us then. We thank you for listening today. And until tomorrow, have a great gridiron day. At the Sports History Network, we're all about sports yesteryear, and so we're so pleased to introduce you to Row One, an online memorabilia gallery and shop that brings you sports history to life anywhere. The Row One gallery includes over 5,200 gorgeously reproduced prints of team posters, game program covers, game tickets, advertisements, and more in baseball, pro and college football, pro and college basketball, and more. And any gallery item may be printed in a variety of sizes on wood, metal, canvas, acrylic, or poster paper. And in Row One shop, check out the thousands more of unique items with a retro and historical designs dating back to 1876, including t-shirts, long sleeve shirts, phone cases, mugs, blankets, pillows, towels, and even shower curtains. Go to sportshistorynetwork.com, ROW number one, for access to the full Row One catalog and for gallery prints and gift items. Plus, get a 15% discount off all prints on the Row One Pictorum Gallery with coupon code SHN15. Follow the link on the show notes. That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.